Good afternoon, Juno, and welcome to our weekly show, Conversations with the Black Awareness Association. I'm Sherry Patterson, president of the association, and I am your host this afternoon, along with Kay Smith. This week, we are honored to have with us attorney Lori Colbert of Colbert Family Law, LLC, Anchorage, Alaska. Lori just stepped into a new adventure, and we thought it was an opportune time to have her on the show and to share about it and more. Lori and I have known each other for about 40 years or more, so we just dated ourselves. So, hello, Lori. How are you doing? Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Sherry. I'm glad that you guys thought of me to include me in this conversation. And I'm happy to be here.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. We know there are many things going on in the world today, and we're going to get probably into some of that. And to help us navigate the conversation this afternoon, we're going to let Kay go ahead and do your thing. Kay?
Thank you so much for that wonderful introduction, Sherry. And welcome, Lori. We so value your presence and appreciate your generosity. Let's jump right into our questions to tell our community, our listeners, more about you. And would you tell us a little about yourself? Everyone wants to know things like how long have you been in Alaska and what brought you to Alaska? Please tell us about yourself.
Well, I'm actually was born here in Anchorage a long time ago. My parents met here in Anchorage, and so I was born and raised here, graduated from high school in Anchorage, and then went off to college and law school and came back home to practice law.
Wonderful. Thank you. I read in your bio a little bit, you went to Willamette University?
It's Willamette University College of Law, yes.
Go ahead.
Yes, I went to Willamette University College of Law in Salem, Oregon for law school. And I went to Claremont McKenna College in Claremont, California for undergraduate.
Wonderful. So what circumstances led you in the direction of working in the justice system? In other words, why a law career? Why were you interested in the law as a child, as a teen? Were there memorable instances along the way that led you in this direction?
That's a really interesting question, and I thought about that a lot. I probably decided that I wanted to be a lawyer when I was in high school. I thought my mom was a teacher, and so at first I said I thought I wanted to be a teacher, but my mom was one of those people that worked really hard for her kids, and she would have me and my father at every program helping her and doing her bulletin boards, and I played the piano at her Mother's Day program. So I decided that teachers worked really hard and maybe that wasn't for me. So I decided that I wanted to do something else, and so I started off wanting to do corporate law, and I found that economics and my mind were not the best of fits. And so I just decided that I really, really wanted to help people. And so that's how I ended up in family law.
Wonderful.
But I went to college knowing that I wanted to go to law school.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Awesome. That's such a motivation for, you know, young boys and girls who are listening to our program or whose parents will tell them about our program. Yeah, we definitely need to see people who are doing things out of the norm, out of the, So where did you study law? We talked about that before, but
yes.
Tell us some of the unique benefits from this experience you had when you, as you, you know, focused on your preparation for this field. Share with us some unique.
I think that, I left college, and both of my parents had retired from their careers, and I had went to a small, private, very expensive liberal arts college, and so I was looking at ways that I could be able to finance law school, and unbeknownst to me, Willamette had a special program that they set aside 2 tuition waivers per year for minority students. They didn't tell you about it before you applied, but after you applied and were accepted into the school, Then they let you know that you got this tuition waiver, and then you had to maintain a certain GPA. So basically, my tuition for law school was paid for 3 years, and that was just amazing. You know, like I said, my parents had both retired, and I often tell the story that my last year of college, my parents paid more per month to my college than they paid for the mortgage on their house. And wow. So, and that was even with the Alaska student loan. So I needed to find something that wasn't going to be that big of a burden financially and still a very good school. And so the Lemon has been around for over 100 years. It has a good reputation in the Northwest, Pacific Northwest. So it was a good fit for me.
Wonderful. Yes, that's definitely motivation for those young scholars who are wanting to have this opportunity. You know, that burden of college debt is weighing heavily, especially on our young people nowadays. So to know that there are corners and there are avenues where you can, you know, have this advantage. Just persistence, right? Persistence and asking persistence. The right question, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Awesome. Okay, tell us about your career as a Black attorney, a woman serving in Alaska.
I can start off by saying there's not very many of us. We recently sought to gather up the Black female attorneys in Alaska. And so there's a group of us now that are meeting on a semi-regular basis, and there's about 10 to 15 of us, which is quite amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And we are literally all over the state of Alaska in all different capacities, be it a judge, legal counsel for a village corporation, partners in law firms, working with Native corporations. I mean, we're just all over the place. And so I think that's very, very cool. So we do have two Black women judges, which, you know, is something that 10 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to tell you that.
Right.
Because we didn't have it. And so I've had my career. Often I'm the only Black person in the courtroom. I still tend to be the one that, how do I say this? You know, I do litigation because I do family law, so I'm in court a lot. So the judges know me, and I've made my reputation by doing the right thing and trying to do the best that I can do. I think that reputation stands, whether I'm a white woman, a Black woman, whatever. I want that reputation of being a good attorney. I don't think in particular that my color has stopped me in any way in my career. But I still am a Black woman in a state where there's very few colored, and I hate to use that word, but people of color. So there have been opportunities. There have been occasions where I've been stopped by the security at the courthouse because there's an attorney's entrance. And they're like, "Are you an attorney?" And I'm like, "Well, did you ask that white man that was right in front of me, was he an attorney?" And, you know, they get flustered because they don't know what to say. What makes me any different from that person that's in front of me or behind me for that matter?
Yeah.
So, you know, we still have those occasions where the people are, you know, "Well, are you the client?" "No, I'm not the client. I'm the attorney."
Wow.
It's partially, it's where we live. We're in Alaska. There's not a lot of us. Even though we have minorities on the bench, we still don't see a lot of people in the courtroom.
Wow. Wow.
Right.
Wow.
Thanks for sharing that because, you know, individuals sometimes might say, "Oh, we're progressed so much, you know, this doesn't happen, that doesn't happen." But to hear from someone who's living this life now and to know that, you know, we still have these instances, these events occurring. So thanks for sharing that. Thanks for being real with that. The other thing that we wonder about, you mentioned briefly about Black professionals and your small group of fellow colleagues serving in the legal system here in Alaska. Would you comment some on your partnerships, your roles as you partner, if there's such partnership sometimes across?
Well, there's not necessarily a partnership just because people do different things. You know, I'm like I said, I'm a litigator, so I'm in an adversarial position where, you know, I'm going against somebody else. We just try to find that collegial and that civility so that we can work with everybody. So I haven't had the opportunity to necessarily partner with other people in that frame that I think that you're asking for, because you have a lot of people that are in corporate work, you know, or in firms that are doing, you know, acquisitions or medical malpractice, or like I said, they're judges. So it's not, for me, I haven't had that opportunity to necessarily collaborate, except to get together and for us to share our stories with each other, because that's, I think, very important.
And that's rich. That's rich and motivational. That is rich. Nothing can replace that, that time of getting together. We would love to hear your perspectives on each of these following topics. We have a few of them. Firstly, regarding Brown versus Board of Education, and for that matter, any other significant ruling that you feel has changed history for Black students that you'd like to comment on. Yeah, Brown versus Board of Education. Some thoughts, your perspectives?
Well,
the little time that we have.
You know, Brown versus Education was the case that decided that separate was not equal, okay? But it didn't. So, in theory, the goal of the decision was to segregate the schools. And I think there's a line, I haven't read the ruling in a since probably law school, which is a long time ago. but I think they said to do it with haste. But what a lot of people don't realize is that there were a whole line of cases after Brown versus the Board of Education, and it took years to make that happen, to actually, you know, get the intent of that ruling in place. I guess is what I'm trying to say. And so I think that was, it was significant in that it started the ball rolling to what the Supreme Court wanted to do, which was put us in a situation where we were having, you know, equal, we were in an equal place as the white people were. I think that the reality, though, is that if we look at cities across the United States, even though schools aren't quote unquote segregated, you still have segregation. An example that I can kind of relate to is when I went to college, I went to school in Southern California, and there were kids from inner city LA schools. And most of those schools were all minority students. Mm-hmm. And there was a program that my college did to help prepare certain students for the college education they were about to receive, okay? The kids that came from the inner city LA schools, they were in that program. I wasn't in that program because I came from Alaska School District. So, you know, even though I might not have had the GPA, you know, some of those kids came from 4.0, but they came from an inner city school that maybe put them, that the school was recognizing that maybe they weren't getting the same level of education that everybody else was getting. So even though that ruling was put in place, I think we still have goals to achieve.
Most definitely. Most definitely. The work is never done.
The work is never done.
Wonderful. Now, the next item that we'd like you to comment on is a person, Thurgood Marshall. Thurgood Marshall was the court's first Black American justice. Okay, he was an American lawyer, a civil rights activist. He served as an associate justice of the Supreme Court of the United States from October 1967 through October 1991. He won a variety of cases and struck down many, many forms of legalized racism, helping to inspire the American Civil Rights Movement. Another of his landmark cases, one includes Brown versus Board of Education. And I think that in terms nowadays, the young people would call him greatest of all time, right? A GOAT. Yes. And so, yeah, what are your thoughts? What perspectives can you share concerning the legacy of Thurgood Marshall?
He's definitely a legal inspiration to me. When you, and I don't know if people really think about it in this way, I had the opportunity to go to the National Civil Rights Museum in Memphis, Tennessee, and it's what it is actually it's the Lorraine Hotel where Dr. King was killed, and they talk about the history of civil rights from the beginning of our nation, and civil rights, you know, the way that civil rights change are through legal cases. And when you think about the impact that Thurgood Marshall had on all those cases that he took one by one to the Supreme Court, it's just amazing to me. He did what I wanted to when I grew up. You know, I always joke around and say that my second career is gonna be to go to D.C. and do civil rights law or working for the Legal Defense Fund, the Children's Defense Fund, something that's, you know, we're truly helping people that aren't able to help themselves. And that's what he did. He helped us get to places that we would not have been able to do without him going into a courtroom and writing those briefs and making those arguments so that we could come to another place.
Wonderful.
Thank you, ladies. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break. I'm really enjoying this conversation, and we'll be right back.